Spirit.
Just before the parable of the rich fool, the Gospel of Luke gives us the context in which the parable was told. It says, "And one of the company said unto him, Master, speak to my brother, that he divide the inheritance with me. And he said unto him, Man, who made me a judge or divider over you? And he said unto them, Take heed and beware of covetousness, for a man's life consisteth not in the abundance of the things which he possesseth. And he spake a parable unto them, saying," and then follows the parable of the rich fool. If you've been around long in this life, you've probably had occasion to be associated with someone who passed away, and at the funeral or before the funeral, the family was doing nothing but bickering about the money that they hoped to inherit from this person. And that's basically what was going on here. And it says it was one of the company, so this was a follower of Christ. This wasn't just some pagan or some Jew who wasn't a follower of Christ, came to Christ and said, you know, hey, my brother is not dividing the inheritance with me the way he's supposed to, and I need you to talk to him. And Christ said, you know, that's not why I'm here. But then he says, beware of covetousness. Because in reality, most people that were around, they do think that their life consists in the abundance of their possessions. That's where they get their happiness from, or at least so they think. And that's what they seek after. But when you see a funeral where the family, the ones that are the dearest to the departed, are doing nothing but fighting over how their wealth of this person is going to be divided, it illustrates two things. One, the vanity of wealth, because you can spend your whole life amassing a fortune, but when you're dead, it's no longer yours, and it's going to be spent by other people who are not necessarily going to appreciate where they got it from. And it's also shows the folly of selfishness, because it blinds us to seeing anything past our own immediate selfish desires. It's amazing to see people who have someone who maybe one of their parents or a sibling passes away, and all they can focus on is what they stand to gain from this, and there's no thought for the person who's passed on, no grief or remorse that this person will no longer be with them. There's a story of a conversation between an ambitious young man and an older man who was trying to get the young man to wake up to the reality of this very thing. The young man said, "I will learn a trade." And the old man then said, "Well, then what?" "I'll set up a business." "Then what?" "I'll make my fortune." The old man said again, "Then what?" "I suppose I'll grow old and retire and live on my money." And he says, "And then what?" "Well, I suppose at some point I'll die." And then came the last question, "Then what?" And that's the one thing that he hadn't thought about. He had thought about everything up to that point, but he was not focused on that final, "And then what?" And the amazing thing about that is that's the only "and then what" that doesn't change once you get there. All those other things are passing. You get to them, you live in that mode of being for some time, you're starting off in life, at another point you're a parent, a grandparent, you're retired, but there's that final "and then what?" And that's if you're fortunate to live that long, because you never know when the Lord might say to you, "You fool, your soul is required of you tonight, and whose shall these things be?" I'm going to tell a story which those of you that have been in the parish a good while will recall that I've told it before, and I'm just telling you this so you don't think I'm losing my memory or anything. But we have a lot of people who weren't there when I last told this. It was several years ago, and plus you might have forgotten. But in any case, it vividly illustrates the point of the gospel reading today. Back in the 19th century in Russia, there was a grandmother and a grandson. The grandson's parents had died when he was young, and the grandmother was raising him. And he wasn't just well off. They were as rich as they could possibly be, to the point where money was not even an issue that was even pondered. And this young man, Vladimir was his name, grew up spoiled. To him, the word "no" didn't exist, but he was a very generous man. But of course, it was easy to be generous because he didn't lack for anything. But he had lots of friends around him because they enjoyed all the things that he gave them. And when he became an adult, he became a member of the Imperial Guard, which was fitting his station, his family status. But nevertheless, he continued to live a life of carelessness, carousing, debauchery. And towards the end of his grandmother's life, she said to him, "Vladimir, after my death, you will have no one. Your friends will strip you of everything, and you will perish a lonely, unfortunate man. Get married." And Vladimir said, "All right, grandmother, I'll get married." So she found someone who would be suitable and made the arrangements, and he danced with her a couple times after having been introduced, and then he proposed, and she said that she would marry him. And then the marriage date was set, and it was set for just after Theophany, because the rules of the church don't allow weddings to take place during the Nativity fast, nor during the feast of Nativity normally. And so during this period of time, while he was waiting, he continued to live the same kind of life that he had, and he didn't really keep contact with this young lady because he, you know, didn't really have that strong of a relationship with her to begin with. And she was a princess from a family that was poor. One thing about Russian culture that, if you haven't studied it, you might not be aware of, but in Russia, there are a lot of people who have the title prince or princess, but that doesn't mean they have any money. And this was one of those families. They were aristocratic. It was acceptable for someone of my status to marry such a person. But this family was in a lot of debt, and so that was the reason why she so readily said yes to the proposal. But as he got closer to the date of the wedding, he began to get more and more concerned about the direction his life was headed in. And the day it came, it was the 2 days after Theophany, and he had to go to his army office to get his pay and also to get leave for his honeymoon. And he was up early, and for a change, he was up early and he wasn't drunk and he wasn't nodding off as he was being driven home by someone. And he was struck by how everyone was going about their business in a very serious way, and the seriousness of life struck him in a way that it never had before. And after he picked up his leave papers and his pay, he asked his carriage driver to follow behind him, and he just walked. And it just so happened that he came upon the Kazan Cathedral, and there was a service that was going on, and there was a longing in his heart to go inside. It's not like he'd never been to church before, because someone in Russia at that time, particularly of that status, would have had more than a few occasions to be in church and would have had to have been there. But he never went there because he really wanted to worship God or anything. It was just a matter of family duty. But in this case, he had a pronounced desperation. A beggar woman who was carrying a small child came up to him and said, "Sir, help me." And being the generous person that he always was, in any case, especially on this occasion, he just handed her the money purse with all the money that he had just gotten from the military and said, "Here, take this." And when she was handed the bag, she dropped it because she wasn't expecting something so heavy. And when she looked inside and saw all these gold coins, she said, "I can't take this because someone will think that I stole this from someone." He said, "Well, the bag has my card in it. Tell them that I gave it to you. Don't you understand? I don't have any need for this." And she told him, "Well, thank you, sir. You saved two lives. But is there anything I can do to repay you for this kindness?" And he said, "As a matter of fact, there is. I need prayer, and I don't know how to pray. Can you pray for me?" And she said, "Sure." So she disappeared into the crowd, but then he saw her reappear up in front of the Kazan icon, and she placed the baby on the steps, and she began with tears and prostrations to pray for him. And he was struck by the love and the compassion of this woman. And then he suddenly felt the urge to leave the church, and he went outside, and it was so bright compared to the darkness of the cathedral that it struck his eyes. And he walked a little bit, and he fainted. He had a pain in his head. And the next thing that he knew, he was lying on a table, dressed in his dress uniform, and people were standing around him. And he came to the conclusion that he was either dead, or at least people thought that he was dead. And his friends were around and they were talking, oh, it's good that he died because I owed him so much money. Good soul that he was, he often lent me money, but I really didn't have the money to pay him back. So, you know, what a lucky thing for me. Then he heard his fiance talking to her father, and her father was saying, you know, just for appearance's sake, could you touch your handkerchief to your eyes and act like you're sad? And she said, I cared nothing for this person. You know, I only married him because we needed the money, and I'm not going to continue on with this comedy. Then they began to read the Psalter, as they do over the deceased. And after having been suddenly awakened to the vanity of this world and the people that he thought were his friends, he came to realize that they really weren't. They really cared nothing for him at all. He listened to the Psalter for the first time. He'd heard it before, but for the first time he actually paid attention to the words. And this time he understood them. And with each song, it awakened his soul. And then finally they began a panakita. And as they began to sing, with the saints give rest, O Lord, and to pick up his body and to put it into the coffin, he suddenly was able to catch his full breath, and he was able to move again. And the people around there were startled, and some of them even ran out of the room because they thought that it was, you know, a ghost or something that they were seeing here. But this man was changed. He was left alone in the room as the people gathered up the courage to take a look back in there to see what had happened. But he was a changed man. Afterwards, he decided to divide all of his property. Half he gave to his fiancée. The rest he gave to the poor. He forgave all of his debts. And soon afterwards, he became a monk, and he finished his life as an ascetic archimandrite in the Kostroma Monastery. This is a person, perhaps because he was generous, perhaps because there was some kindness in him, God gave another opportunity, and he was awakened. We never know, though, however, when that moment will come, when we will die. In this person's case, he got sort of the foretaste of it. Most of us are not going to get that. For most of us, one moment we're going to be alive, the next minute we're going to be dead, and it might come suddenly, unexpectedly, or maybe not. But we have to come to an awareness that which we have is not the important thing in our life. When we come to the end of our life, we won't regret that we didn't spend more time acquiring things because they'll be of no use to us. But we'll have regrets, perhaps, that we didn't spend more time with our loved ones, perhaps that we didn't spend more time trying to serve God. And certainly, we will either hear the words, "Thou fool, this day thy soul is required of thee," or, "Thou good and faithful servant, well done." In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen.